From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
When you're somebody like Leader Pross, you can walk on water and you're going to make somebody mad. The reality is that he's made his decision, and he is going to explore statewide office. And there comes a point in time, no matter what you do in life, that it's time to make a change, step aside, and bring forth new ideas.
The positive thing that comes out of here today is that it was a unanimous vote.
And Raymond
made a motion to vote by acclamation, and that's why I think that speaks volumes about where this caucus is at and that there is no divisiveness, that we are a unified group, and we're going to use that energy to move forward, to win races, and to get out of this superminority.
You know, I think it's important to remember that we all represent different districts and different constituencies. And so as we move forward, will I agree with my fellow colleagues on every issue? Probably not. But I think it's important that we unite and that we move forward with strength as we fundraise in the future as well.
Well, that is three state representatives, all Republicans. Adam Brown, before him, you heard from Jim Durkin, and Dan Brady to start things off. Jim Durkin has a new job. He will become the Republican leader in the Illinois House. The Republicans meeting this weekend behind closed doors to make that choice. He will replace Tom Cross, who has announced he plans to step aside and likely run for state treasurer. We'll discuss that and more on this week's State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Brian Mackey, IPR State House Reporter. Our guest this week, Kurt Erickson of Lee Newspapers. And Kurt, good to talk with you again.
Good to be here.
Kurt, I'll start with you. I guess not a big surprise that Jim Durkin, we talked about it on this show last week, that he might become the next leader, but things seem to not be quite as contentious at the meeting as they had been leading up to this, and because there had been a bit of a fight underway among some downstaters. Durkin is from the Chicago suburbs.
Yeah, I've just got to think that after months of downstate Republicans saying that we have more numbers than our colleagues in the suburbs, and we're going to exert that power if we can stick together, that it was surprising that a suburban Chicago man is going to be the next leader of the minority party in the House. It might have been a case where the person that was running as the downstate candidate, Raymond Poe, was just not the right man for that position, and Durkin kind of worked it for several months, traveling around the state, meeting with potential supporters, and maybe worked a little bit harder than Raymond Poe.
Oh, Poe, you heard a reference there in the opening saying that, I think it was Durkin saying that Raymond Poe asked for a vote by acclamation, meaning that he sort of took his name out of the running when they got into that vote, I guess, and realizing he probably did not have the support needed. But do you buy what the others were saying, that there's no divisiveness among the party or among the caucus, that they can move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can move forward. I think there's disappointment. I don't know how much division there is. It's a lot like the Democratic Party when it comes to a lot of issues. They don't always agree on along party lines. Look at like gun control, splits the Democrats downstate and Chicago. And so there are similar issues with Republicans that they don't agree on one way to do pension reform, because a lot of them downstate represent districts with big numbers of state employees or university employees.
Well, Amanda, let me go to you. You covered this as well. For the person that doesn't follow state government really closely, is this a big deal? I mean, they're in the super minority, the Republicans in the House and also in the Senate. But, I mean, it's not like they're going to be able to push through their legislative agenda just because they have a new leader.
No, which I think is part of the frustration Cross had and why he ended up stepping down and looking for different opportunities. He, of course, expected to run instead for treasurer, although that hasn't been formally announced yet. And I think also frustration by House Republicans with Cross as well. So there's twofold, that supermajority status really ending up kind of hurting the caucus and I think leading to a lot of dispirit there. They're at a point now of, you know, excitement and we're moving forward. Something is new, revamping. But yes, even though Durkin says that he plans to do some more with fundraising and he wants to unify this diverse caucus, as he calls it, they are still in that super minority status. Nonetheless, I mean, he's a legislative leader and, you know, kind of the, in Illinois, they're known as the Four Tops. And of course, for such a long time now, it has been the Four Tops, but really the two. It's House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton that rule the roost. And some even argue more so, and they have more power even than the governor. Republicans, yes, they have a say, but in the super minority status, it's just not anywhere near what it could be. They used to be needed to, for example, get votes on borrowing. But now they don't even need that whatsoever. Pensions, however, yeah, I don't think that we're going to see Democrats pass that without Republican votes. So, I think that we will see in areas, Durkin, and the differences that he has with Cross in areas such as pensions coming into play.
It strikes me, we heard at the top of the show, Durkin mentioned the super minority status of Republicans. That's both in the House and the Senate. So the Democrats have veto-proof majorities if they all stick together. And I think people could look at this from the outside and say, boy, Republicans really took a drubbing at the last election. Maybe it's a little surprising that earlier they didn't try to unseat the people who were supposed to be leading them to victory and ended up losing a bunch of seats. And so Christine Redonia was able to hold on to her position in the Senate, and Tom Cross held on in the House. And I think from somebody looking at this on the outside might say, well, I'm kind of surprised it took them this long to, you know, change horses when to extend this metaphor, their horse was kind of drowning midstream, right? What's the saying? You don't change horses midstream, but I mean, their horses were underwater in the last election, and yet they stuck with their leaders for now. I should say until now.
But Charlie, let me go back to that, because being a leader, I don't care if you're in the super minority, it's not an easy job. You've got to, you know, get all these people together. You got to try to keep them at least in a semblance of being on the same page. Is Jim Durkin in for a rough ride here?
I think it'll be a real challenge for him, because one of the things that he's going to have to do, and he addressed it, is get out of the super minority. Obviously, they would like to be in the majority. I don't see that happening before the next redistricting. In 2020, what would it be, 2021, simply because of the map that was drawn by the Democrats. And I think, to go back to what Brian said, one of the things that insiders realize is, yeah, the Republicans took a drubbing last time out, but they were operating under maps drawn by the Democrats, Mike Madigan and John Cullerton, specifically to give the Republicans a drubbing. And they were doing it at a time when the top of the ticket was an Illinoisan, Barack Obama, running for a second term as president. So, you know, it could have been worse, actually, for the Republicans last time around. But I think the key thing that Durkin has to do is try and recruit good candidates for districts that may be perceived as marginal and more winnable in a year that there's not a presidential race going on. And then he's got to put together a team that can go out and do the day-to-day campaign work that is required for success. And finally, and maybe most importantly, he's got to be able to raise money to pay for the direct mailings, to pay for the TV time outside the Chicago area, and to do all the things that are needed in this day and age to put on a successful campaign. So it's a huge challenge. And the election part of it is kind of distinct from what you do sitting in meetings with your caucus in Springfield and trying to develop positions on public policy.
Well, I say that's actually a good point, Charlie, about the financial aspect of this. And that was one of the things we heard coming out of the meeting yesterday, and even going into the meeting, is that one of the reasons it's a little inside baseball here, but, you know, how fast should the Republicans move? Should they wait and meet next month? Should they meet right away? And one of the reasons that Durkin and his allies were saying we need to get on with this as soon as possible is that they say the fundraising organization for the House Republicans is in, quote, dire financial straits. that it's really just in a terrible shape. Doesn't have, I think, what did I read? $20,000, $21,000, something like that?
$52,000.
Okay. So still not a lot of money when we hear about, you know, big campaign funds having, you know, measured in the millions of dollars. So in order for them to try and get on with the fundraising as quickly as possible, I think that's why they viewed that having somebody that they can look to as a leader and who can approach the business community that is so critical to Republican fundraising.
There was a time when Republicans had no trouble raising money in this state. It goes back to power, I guess. I mean, if you hold the House and you hold the Senate and you hold the governor's office, there's not necessarily a lot of money to go around for that, for somebody that's, as we mentioned, in the super minority. Kurt Erickson, I mean, you can remember back when Republicans, you know, far out exceeded Democrats in fundraising.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, as, you know, Democrats have had their, you know, hands on the on power, they have spent more money than Republicans in legislative races by far.
Well, Kurt, you cover your readership for your newspapers is primarily downstate, a lot of different areas, Southern Illinois, Central Illinois, and others. Some of the people that you have that you cover, both Republicans and Democrats, see things a lot differently than maybe what Jim Durkin does up in the Chicago suburbs. So again, I want to get back to is this divide among the upstate, downstate in this party, is this going to be able to be overcome, or are we going to see a party that still stays very fractured going forward?
I guess I would put it in terms of it makes a little bit of sense for a suburban guy to be in there because that's where the battleground is going to be as far as campaigns go. So, you know, he'll be close to the action, you know, during this upcoming election. So, you know, I think the divide will remain. I don't see there's any way that the demographics of, you know, where Adam Brown, for example, he represents a Central Illinois district. He's got U of I workers. He's got state workers, you know, he's got heavy union presence in Decatur. So you can kind of guess where he's going to fall when it comes down on pensions. So that's not going to change in the foreseeable future.
I mean, pensions and state spending are kind of unique issues here. I mean, we're not going to see the Republicans, I think, you know, splitting over same-sex marriage or something. I think there's only two House Republicans who have come who've said that they would, you know, vote for the same-sex marriage legislation were it to get called in the House. This is an issue where they're very unified. A lot of social issues, I think, they tend to be a little more unified. And I mean, because this is still, as we've said before, a Democratic state controlled, and the legislature is controlled by Democrats, I don't know that they're going to have an opportunity to appear as fractured on this. Pensions is kind of a unique issue, but it's worth noting that Democrats are pretty divided on pensions too. I mean, obviously that's why we still have not seen any legislation, because the two top Democrats in the legislature, Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton, are both divided on this. So, I mean, I don't know if that's something that's unique to Republicans. Pensions is such a huge overhanging issue that it seems like a lot of lawmakers are divided.
I mean, I agree. I think, of course, pensions is a hard one, and yet it's just a matter of, you know, getting the votes and collecting that. And it will be interesting to see where Durkin comes down the line on that. Cross had been really the one who had really pushed this to the forefront and had, you know, started these talks years ago and has been very tightly aligned with what the business community wants and was really pushing for kind of tougher plans. And it will be noteworthy, I think, to see what Durkin does, particularly who knows what sort of promises were made or discussions were had in his as he came to clinch the leadership spot, what all he said to those downstaters. So I think we'll have to keep a close eye on that. And I'm going to kind of, I guess, say that I do think that Republicans are divided more than when it just comes to pensions. And I think, for example, yes, there are only two Republicans with same-sex that have come out in support of same-sex marriage. And of course, there's a big lobbying effort to try and change that vote. Durkin himself was one of the individuals who'd been reportedly considering going along with it until that was early on when Cross was considering running for Attorney General before Attorney General Lisa Madigan decided to run again for that spot. That Durkin, you know, that came out and in his desire to want to be leader even then seemed to drop his any thought that he would vote for gay marriage. And I think that you see there kind of it's broader than just Illinois, but the kind of debate going on within the GOP as just demographics change, as you see that there are more people, for example, younger people that are, you know, okay with gay marriage, that yes, there's a battle in the Republican Party for how to go about those things. And we've seen that time and time again. And that's why it's been hard to get a chair of the GOP as well, and or at least a successful one. We've seen plenty of battles, and I don't think that that's going away.
Well, it occurs to me, and pensions again as an example, to be an effective leader, you don't have to make all of your members toe the line on every single issue. Mm-hmm. And pensions is one where if I were in Durkin's shoes, I would tell my caucus, you vote your district. If you think it's a good vote to be for whatever plan comes forward to reduce benefits for retirees, vote for it. If you think it would hurt you politically, or if you think it's the wrong kind of vote for constitutional reasons, vote against it. That's not an issue where you should demand party allegiance. And to me, that's been one of the one of the hallmarks of Madigan's success as a leader. His willingness to let members go their way on things that were important to them. And when I was a reporter back, this is 20-some years ago, I can remember seeing Mike Madigan telling people to vote against bills that he sponsored because a vote for the bill would hurt them in the district, and he had the votes he needed to pass the bill. He didn't need their vote.
And again, it gets back to money, because if you have money, if you're somebody like Durkin and you have a big war chest to help candidates with, sometimes you can hold a lot more control over them if you're not going to be able to provide them a lot of assistance, especially when it comes to financial assistance, then you don't have as much sway either.
But the key thing I think is you got to have a sense of what each member's district is and what issues are good and which issues are harmful. There was a time some years back when Mike Madigan sponsored a bill dealing with factory farms. And so you're thinking, why is a guy from 64th and Keeler in Chicago sponsoring a bill dealing with hog farms? And it was because there were downstate candidates for whom this bill was a good political thing, and they could say, if you send me to the House, I have the speaker to help me push this, which is important in our district.
And this is State Week in Review. Just ahead, looks like only two people vying for that Democratic nomination for governor. We'll discuss that just ahead.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
And we're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey, and our guest this week, Kurt Erickson. Well, Brian Mackey, was it a big surprise when Kwame Raoul decided, the state senator, Democratic state senator from Chicago, that he's not going to run for the nomination for governor in his party, because he certainly had made some moves toward that earlier in the year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a huge surprise. I noted it was interesting. This is something that I don't think a lot of people were, at the beginning of the year, not a lot of people would have said, oh, yeah, Kwame Raoul, he's definitely, you know, in the running to step up from the state Senate to take on Governor Quinn. But he put himself out there on a lot of issues. He was very involved in trying to negotiate the concealed carry legislation and ended up kind of stepping back from that at the last minute when it wasn't quite the deal he wanted. But this summer, again, he's taken on he's chairman of this special pension commission that's trying to come up with a compromise solution to deal with the state's $100 billion in projected pension liabilities. But so it's really picked up steam in August. People started there were stories written about him potentially taking on Governor Quinn. There were questions: would he be a spoiler for for Governor Quinn and help Bill Daley win the nomination. I thought it was interesting he showed up at the Democratic County Chairman's Association's brunch, which is on Governor's Day at the State Fair here in Springfield. He showed up wearing a polo shirt that said Raul for Illinois, not Raul for my state Senate district, but Raul for Illinois, which is kind of an indicator of a statewide ambition. But ultimately, he says that he wants to focus on pensions. He maybe doesn't think that, getting a fundraising apparatus to catch up to the millions of dollars that have been raised, by other candidates seeking the gubernatorial nomination might be a little late to try and do that. Even getting the organization together to get the thousands and thousands of signatures you need to get on the ballot takes a lot of effort and planning and work. So he says that at this time, he is not going to be seeking the nomination for governor.
Raul came into the legislature in 2004, and people may not remember, he was appointed to fill a vacancy created when Barack Obama was elected to the U.S. Senate. He actually is in that seat that Barack Obama held, so it can be done to launch a pretty big political career from that district, I guess. Mm-hmm. Kurt Erickson, like Brian was mentioning, some people thought this would him staying out of the race would certainly help Pat Quinn. Do you see it that way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pat Quinn wins again. Yeah, I kind of thought the Raul talk was sort of like in a sports metaphor, everybody loves the backup quarterback Quinn people aren't too excited about. Bill Daley, they're, it's another Daley. So here comes the senator and people got excited.
But it may have been different had he actually played, and we would have seen perhaps that change. And the backup quarterback, maybe it looks good in practice, but what about when it's actually on the field in the big game and there's a reason he's the quarterback? Perhaps.
Obviously
this didn't happen.
Pat Quinn was the backup quarterback for a while, too, to Rod Blagojevich. He looked pretty good at one point. Maybe some people not feeling that way as much. Now, does this change how his strategy at all? I mean, I guess he never could count on Raul being in the race, but does this change how he goes about this campaign?
I think he's been targeting Quinn all along, so he can kind of continue doing what he's been doing.
What I find really remarkable about this is that there is, from what we've seen in polls, Democratic voters aren't very excited about either Quinn or Daley. It is clear in the General Assembly that there is a lot of distaste for Governor Quinn just in his leadership. You know, you talk to legislators and they just aren't really happy with him. And yet was no sort of coordinated effort to get somebody else. I think that was what we saw with this Quimera Raul and everybody really getting excited about it. And but perhaps it was just that there was so much attention given to, it'll be Lisa Madigan, and everybody waiting for that.
Amanda, mm-hmm. I was going to ask, didn't that kind of sort of take the air out of that? I mean, and the fact that there were people there, I think if you'd have talked to people in the spring, they would have said, yes, definitely Lisa Madigan mm-hmm. is running. And maybe now it's too late for some people because you do have to raise a lot of money, a lot of name ID. It's hard to jump into the race and build that up at this point.
Oh, yeah, which is where I just, again, it's perhaps that is the issue with having a House Speaker who's head of the Democratic Party of Illinois. And as that, he's really more in tune with being the House Speaker than in a, one unified party, that there was no sort of coordinated effort to get the ducks in a row and say, okay, is Lisa Madigan going to run? Yes, no. So many decisions change based on her and deciding not to run for governor. And I think that, if I were a Democrat that was, looking at this, I'd be frustrated. Kwame Raul, I'm sure, is. He'd wanted to run for attorney general as well. And instead, she's holding on there. But also, just there was not the time or effort to get somebody to run against Quinn. And again, maybe I'm off here. I'm not involved in these discussions. And I mean, I think that Governor Quinn, he's a Democrat. He won last time around. That was what Democrats wanted. But it is interesting when you look back a year ago, for example, and the AFSCME union was, rallying against Quinn and booing him and following him all throughout the fair and saying, we've got to do this. And yet even then they couldn't say, yeah, we're trying to get somebody to run against him. And I just think it goes back and kind of makes one question, okay, so of course, where is AFSCME going to go then? And I think that showed, okay, they're not going to go and support a Republican candidate, so they're going to stick with the governor. What is the incentive for Democrats to continue to treat, for example, unions like they once did. Unions aren't going to leave them, and they're not with Quinn. We didn't see unions use their power against him. I guess we'll see what they do in this coming election and how closely aligned they do. Then again, they did get some of their pay raises and kind of worked it out with Quinn in the end.
Charlie, I'll give you the last word on this one.
Well, I just going to say that the boomlet, if you will, for Raul was born in part out of frustration by a lot of Democrats who don't like the choices that are on the table. They don't like Quinn. They think he's been an ineffective governor, to put it mildly. They don't trust the Daley. And they were hoping for a third option. They were hoping for Lisa Madigan. She withdrew. They were hoping for Kwame Raul. He's not going to do it. And so I wonder, is this going to be like the second time Rod Blagojevich ran in 2006, when there were a lot of Democrats who wouldn't vote for Blagojevich but also were not comfortable with the Republican choices, Judy Bart Topinka and Joe Burkett. And so the Green Party candidate got 10% of the vote, and Blagojevich won, although most voters who voted in the election voted for somebody else other than Blagojevich. So I'm wondering if there's a possibility for disenchanted Democrats to go to a third party, which in the long run could have an impact on the election. Quinn only won by 30,000 votes last time.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Kurt Erickson, I'll start with you.
Well, it took some legwork and patience to get the numbers, but State Journal Register columnist Dave Bakke reported today that new doors installed as part of the renovation of the West Wing of the Capitol cost over $100,000 apiece. And one reason for the high price was the outsides of the doors are clad in copper. So some expensive doors when you come into the Capitol.
Now, be careful when you open those, okay? And then also Brian Mackey.
Yeah, well, speaking of, that's a $50 million renovation that happened in the West Wing of the Capitol. There's also a $12.6 million renovation going on at the Illinois Supreme Court, and that means that the justices are going to be taking their show on the road to Chicago for about a year. There's a courtroom in Chicago that has seven seats for seven justices, so they'll be hearing cases in downtown Chicago for the next year. So if you've always wanted to see your high court in action and you live up in the Chicagoland area, you're going to be visiting, you'll have the chance to do so.
And Brian, you did say that this was the first time that they're going to hold a session like this outside of Springfield.
Yeah, this is thought to be the first time that they're going to hold a full term. They've held individual cases, although as far as I can tell, there's only been really one argument in the past 15 years that's been in Chicago. But this will be the first full term outside of the Springfield court building since it opened in 1908.
And they have one big case that's coming up for them in this, or a lot of big cases, but one that we're really watching closely.
One that state government people are really watching, which is a challenge to the new law that went into effect last year that requires retirees to pay for their health insurance. Previously, if you retired with 20 years of service, you could get a premium-free health insurance, and now you have to pay. There's a lawsuit challenging that. A lot of people are watching it, thinking that it might have some effect on how the court eventually rules on the pension issue as well.
Amanda Vinicky.
I'd like to highlight a report that Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald did. It's been about a year since Illinois allowed video poker in, you know, truck stops and in bars and restaurants, and boy, are they everywhere. But Illinois has not made any sort of self-exclusion rule for these places. So casinos, if you're an addicted and compulsive gambler, you can put yourself on a list so that casinos would basically be able to kick you out in order to prevent you from you losing all of your money and going to casinos constantly. But there is no such thing for these video poker slots. And the hard part about it is that you sure can't avoid them. They're in pretty much every restaurant, every bar, everywhere.
And also coming up here in the next week, we should know a little bit more about who will be lieutenant governor candidates for these gubernatorial hopefuls. Several of the candidates for governor expected to make some announcements starting that very, very soon. Well, that's it for State Week in Review this week. Thanks to our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey, and also to Kurt Erickson of Lee Newspapers. And production assistance has been provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.